Brian Had a Dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hello and welcome once again. I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And you are listening to The Quest for 10,000. Thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode. We hope you share it with a friend as we continue to join on Brian's quest to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. In this episode, we talk about superhero movies as we continue our quest into different genres of movies that Brian has seen upon his quest. Our big topic will be the evolution of superhero movies from the film serials way back in the 30s and 40s all the way to present day. And we'll ask the question of where could superhero movies and where should superhero movies go next? Our top five will be top five casted superhero characters. That means the top five superheroes that were most perfectly casted as their counterparts. So before we get to all of that, Brian, as always, we begin with, where are you in the quest for 10,000?
7,347-ish.
Tell us the last movie you saw that you want to talk about.
Okay. he says that because there were a couple of movies that I don't want to talk about. The last movie, this was a couple of days ago, Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising. And I enjoyed the movie. It had a point to it. The girls in the main cast of girls, main trio of girls, led by Chloe Grace Moretz, she's going into sorority and she wants to party. And the people at the sorority tell her, well, that sororities aren't allowed to throw parties. We can go to frat parties, but we're not allowed to throw parties. She said, well, that's sexist. So the point of the movie is they form their own sorority that's independent, and they want to, but they want to make it to be where it's female empowered and not all about, hey, because they went to a frat party, and the frat party was clearly designed as like just a big trap to get the girls to sleep with the guys, okay? And at one point the girl goes, it's like there's just a big arrow pointing us up to the bedroom. And she walks by, and there is a big neon arrow saying, upstairs!
Subtle.
So, yeah, I mean, the movie's not subtle, but it is trying to say, it does have a larger point about the way we treat women and the way that we are okay with men doing certain things, but if women did the same things, they'd be shamed or put aside. There's one point at which I think the girls bombard their neighbor's house with tampon. They throw used tampon at this house, which is gross, granted, but one of the guys that's helping them, he goes, where'd y'all get all that fake blood? And they're like, it wasn't fake. And he's like, that's disgusting. She's like, yes, but if we had thrown a bag of dicks at them, you'd think that was funny. And he goes, yeah, you're right, I would. He's like, yeah, that's pretty funny. So, I mean, it's just this point that, like, the same equivalent in a male is not seen the same way, or it's kind of like not as off color as it would be if it's a woman making the same joke. It's a pretty good movie.
Yeah, so that also stars Zac Efron
and Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne.
As we dive into the superhero genre, I kind of have to admit I think about a really bad superhero movie.
Oh, the Green Hornet.
Hornet, which is also one of the earliest potential superheroes that was really communicated through media, through radio serials, and I don't know if there was a film serial of the Green Hornet, but I do know that the Green Hornet inspired Batman. And that's really where our discussion of our big topic this episode starts, with superhero movies, and perhaps it'll end there. Batman might just end up being a recurring theme. I can't think of another superhero that's been on film quite as much as Batman has, Brian. What do you think?
Well, there's a lot of Spider-Man movies that have come out since 2000. It feels like we're on our third iteration of Spider-Man. Batman's probably the big one. And he's probably one of the most recognizable superheroes to people all over the world.
Well, and Batman, of course, started in the world of serials, those little films that used to be played before your main attraction. And strikes the first tone of superhero movies in their first iteration were seen mostly as kids' fare. Mm-hmm. That seems to be a label it probably had for quite some time, up until probably the 1970s with the release of really the first, what I know of, as a mainstream superhero feature film, Superman, starring Christopher Reeve. Brian, what would you say about that movie that was significant in terms of establishing a superhero genre?
Well, I mean, A, Christopher Reeve's performance. B, you managed to get, at the time, a top-level name, a couple of top-level names. You had Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor, which was, you know, when you think back on it now, probably not the best cat. I mean, he, you know, if you think Lex Luthor, you don't think Gene Hackman. But, it, you know, it was a big name that was willing to give it sort of a gravitas it wouldn't have had otherwise. And Marlon freaking Brando as Jor-El was a big deal.
Right. Well, it's funny, I even forgot Marlon Brando. I thought you were going to say Ned Beatty.
I love Ned Beatty. I love Ned Beatty.
Lots of Oscar nominated.
But yeah, I mean, it was just crazy.
Award winning, I think, actors as well.
And I don't think you can overstate how important it was. And the guy's a legend, but how important the John Williams theme was to making that movie work.
Right.
You know, I think we all take him for granted, but I think his work in that and in Star Wars really did help make those movies a lot more memorable. And just stuck in our consciousness more than they would have otherwise.
Yeah, and I think that movie was really the first to establish the genre. Maybe even if it wasn't chronologically first, maybe there's probably a film I don't even know about. You might say it was even a superhero film to predate that one. But I think the timing compared to the day of that movie is really important. Because I think that movie probably came out when a lot of creators of today were themselves kids and going to see movies and doing that sort of thing. And I think we'll come back to this later, but I think that probably had as much influence on later iterations of superheroes and the idea that you could have big stars in them.
But
it wasn't people slumming. It wasn't any longer kids' entertainment.
Yeah.
Pretty underdeveloped kind of repercussion of that movie.
Yeah. No, I certainly agree. It sort of raised the bar for it. And I think it opened a lot of eyes as to what a movie could do and could be. And it kind of opened up, you know, you were playing in this one little corner of the sandbox and all of a sudden you look around and now there's this big, huge other area that you haven't gone to yet. So now you're like, I want to see how far this thing goes.
As we're talking about the evolution of superhero movies, that early on, it took a while for Hollywood to kind of know what to do with them past
the origin story.
An origin story, and maybe one, you could get away with one other kind of story to tell, and then it just kind of fell in its own way.
Well, it is difficult. Candy. It's difficult with superhero movies to ratchet up the level of the threat before you have gotten to the most extreme possible threat. And then once you've done that, what are you going to do after, like, I've saved the world from utter destruction? What's next? You can't do that again. Otherwise, you're making the same movie over and over again.
Now, probably around this time, you had some other movies come out. Two that I can think of right off the top of my head. Toxic Avenger, B-level movie.
Definitely kind of B-level movie.
Comic character, The Swamp Thing. A DC Comics property that was, again, kind of a B movie.
But that's not really a superhero movie so much as it's horror genre inspired, like Universal horror inspired, right?
Well, but no, it was based on a very...
I know, but it feels more like a...
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say
creature movie.
I would say it wasn't as obviously influential on the genre. But again, it does point to there was this development of, you know, what do we do with this? And it just was sort of campy. And that kind of changed, though, again, I think, around 1989.
Big year.
You had Batman, Tim Burton's Batman, and then 90 or 91 when Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles came out.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, even more so than Superman, those kind of hit at the right time to really be really huge commercial successes.
The Batman movie, I mean, I remember when I was a kid and it came out and it was blowing box office numbers out the wazoo, you know. And I was at the age where I just kind of coming alive as far as pop culture awareness. I was 11, turned 11 or turned 10 that summer. And I promise you, my brother and I both had the black Batman shirt with the symbol on it. And right. I'm going to just a guesstimate that I wore that shirt probably 60% of the year. Cause I mean, I feel like if you look back at pictures of me from the time I'm like 10 to 12, right. There's a 60% chance I'm sporting Batman. Like,
what was it able to add from maybe what had been established before with Superman?
I think we kind of deride his contributions to the genre now, but I think Tim Burton and his design and the ideas and the like, just making it come alive, but in a way that wasn't kid looking, you know, that looked real and grimy and gritty and dirty, but also bizarre and just had this real shape to it. Mm-hmm. I think you cannot talk about that enough. Jack Nicholson's performance as the Joker was just, at the time especially, this perfect blend of camp, but also real dark sinisterness to it. He has said in interviews that he considers it a work of pop art, and I think that's a good way to think about it, you know, that he's more or less like saying that I'm doing what Andy Warhol was doing. I'm taking, you know.
It seems to me that part of what you're saying is that, you know, those movies of the late 80s, early 90s kind of added a sense of grounding, you know, to mm-hmm. the early kind of these fantastical tales, but added kind of a human element, a realism, a core that people could connect to in a different way than maybe what it.
And in
before.
Some ways, I think it may still, Batman may still be, If not number one, it's still one of Tim Burton's best movies 20 years later, just because it was just such a perfect. And I know that I'm maybe increasingly on the other wrong side of this argument, but I maintain Batman Returns is an excellent film. That DeVito's Penguin is perfect. Michelle Pfeiffer's the Catwoman is genius.
I would agree with that. I do know there are some people who are just simply.
Oh, I know.
I've
that movie. But I think a lot of hatred.
But I think too, those kind of played out, and then it kind of petered out to a degree. And I think again, maybe what it was not so much that Hollywood didn't know what to do with it, as much as maybe the great commercial success of them were their undoing, mm-hmm. And that those who really had control of those intellectual properties, the comic book companies themselves, you know, didn't have enough control or ownership.
That's certainly true.
And then the other piece of that, you know, Burton did two Batman movies and then passed it on to Joel Schumacher.
Which was a mistake. They sort of got the wrong lessons from Burton's success, is that they thought, understandably so, that the reason Burton's movies were successful is because of the unique visual style he could bring to the film.
Right.
So let's go to a guy who's going to bring a unique visual style to these movies. But he brought too much visual style and no substance.
I think what was missing is not only the substance, but the sense of passion. Even though, again, that superhero is fantastic, but wanting them to have a sense of dignity about them. I don't think Schumacher had that.
Well,
I think we got closer to that sense of dignity, though, and I think what was kind of the next step in the evolution of these movies, which is the early 2000s, mid-2000s, with Spider-Man 1 and 2 by Sam mm-hmm. Raimi. And X-Men 1 and 2.
Spider-Man was one of those movies, too, that came along at the time where the technology allowed them to do things they could not have done 2 years earlier.
Right.
And that really opened up what kind of stories you could tell. And you saw the same sort of advancements being made in science fiction movies, too, where all of a sudden you have these capabilities of telling, of showing things on the screen that you could only talk about on the screen, you know, in the past, and now you can show him swinging from building to building, and that just added to the movie.
That did add a lot, and I think that, you know, the other things obviously that added was that was the first time Marvel got into the game with actual decent movies. I think there had been an earlier Fantastic Four movie, the Roger
that they like, they buried movie, under, yeah,
that they had to make just so that
they wouldn't lose the rights, yeah.
And so I think that's really important because it got Marvel in the game. I think when those franchises, also the third installments, didn't do well in either one of them, it kind of pushed Marvel then to say, if we're going to do this again, we're going to have control. We're not going to deal with all these external things that probably led to the lack of impact those third installments in each made. And then the other thing, though, I think that it did, I think X-Men's probably kind of the first movie, and Jackman's kind of emblematic then maybe of that kind of change in attitude. There's something about this genre of film that really, really deserves respect as much as any other genre. And you see that by the commitment that Singer and others kind of devoted. And you see in Jackman's performance again, portraying a character first time in around 2000, and then, you know, going to be the last time in 2017.
Well, so he says it's going to be the last time.
Right, and it could be more, which would even...
We've read enough comic books to know there is no last time.
There is no last time. So that brings us probably to what is the real just... I think it was all maybe building to this in retrospect. But the real game changer and what has made now superhero genre, maybe the genre of films now, occurred in, what, 2008 with...
2008, that's when both The Dark Knight and Iron Man premiered. And Iron Man, The Dark Knight, you knew was going to be successful because Batman Begins had been successful. And then you had this, like, once Heath Ledger died, you had this, like, months-long build-up to The Dark Knight that just made it, you knew it was going to be a hit. Granted, it's a great film to stand on, but you just knew. Iron Man was a bit of a gamble because Iron Man was not a top-tier character in Marvel's storehouse. Like, he was not one that everybody knew who Iron Man was. And also, Robert Downey Jr., as beloved as he is now, he was still on the bounce back from a pretty, right, what could have been a career-ending scandal or series of scandals, and he was still sort of, he was there, he was dependable, he was good, but he wasn't ubiquitous and he wasn't beloved.
Right. I think I agree, and I think what really set those movies apart and really helped them be the ones that ushered in this latest era of superhero movies. A couple of things. One is, you mentioned Jack Nicholson said the Joker pop art. Mm-hmm. Well, Heath Ledger, The Dark Knight, I think it was art.
Yeah.
People saw superhero movies as art. And I think what Iron Man did is that it made kind of superhero movies fun. And I think what both of them did is they made the movie as much about stuff other than the superheroes. You know, you were hooked into this character Robert Downey Jr. was playing, who just so happened to be a superhero. And you were hooked into the story of Bruce Wayne and Batman and the redemption and trying to save his city and, you know, doing all he can and maybe making mistakes along the way. They tricked you into cheering for a superhero movie in some sense, by kind of presenting other stories, but then wrapping them in the superhero garb.
They had learned how to take this form and apply it to different themes and different sort of twists on it in a way that they couldn't have done 5, 6, 7 years before.
And the other thing they both did was, I think, world building in some way. Of course, Nolan, yeah, it was really Nolan building on what he'd done the first one. And you can say the Nolan world kind of ended with The Dark Knight Rises a few years later.
Marvel's
world building still going on, amazingly. And we've talked about that before. We don't need to necessarily go over that old ground. But maybe we could say, you know, Iron Man started this formula of Marvel movies. And I think it's a fair question to ask, why is that formula so successful? Maybe this gets us into thinking about where superhero movies go next. What's going to be the next big kind of thing in their evolution? I'm saying, is there a time where Marvel's formula is going to kind of run out of steam?
Well, one thing, now Iron Man's a little different because Tony was, you know, already filthy rich when it starts. But one of the things that's the hallmark of the Marvel formula is an ordinary guy who this extraordinary event happens to him, and he finds within himself the courage to change himself and change the world. And I think that is, you know, part of the thing that appeals to so many people is so many people want to see themselves in that situation. They want something extraordinary, and they want to believe that if it did, they would rise to the occasion. Right. You know, we don't ever see a superhero movie where somebody gets bitten by a radioactive spider and becomes just a douchebag who has radioactive, right, material. You know, that doesn't happen.
Right.
Because, well, or they just, they run and cower and they say, I can't do it. They overcome their fears. We all want to be that, right, person.
Yeah, well, in the more of a formula, I would say it's kind of, you know, you have this novice who gets these powers, so they're trying to learn, and it is sort of this, you know, who am I going to be?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I think, you know, superhero movies, again, since then have done well, like I said, it's kind of a blending a genre, maybe. Take mm-hmm. something like Thor by Kenneth Branagh. Yeah, it's pretty much Shakespeare, but just done in superhero movies. I've heard other people say The Dark Knight Rises is a war movie, but just done with Batman. Now, of course, Iron Man, Dark Knight, eight years ago now. And there's been other, I think, really good movies. But I'd almost argue that we're too close to know if those are just simply almost perfect executions of the formula, twists on the formula, or if there's something new. I'm thinking of films like Deadpool, Guardians of the Galaxy, even Batman, Superman. It's hard to say whether or not those are something new, or whether they're just different, various levels of execution of what we've already seen.
Well, I will say the one movie to me that I think will, you know, I think will be studied for what it did and what the effect it's had on our culture would be The Avengers from 2012. And that movie was a watershed moment as far as what you could do. I mean, you know, not only did it make all the money, but it was this idea that you could really, that it, you know, that it would pay off, that you could set these things in motion and have different movies and build and build and build, and that you could have that movie there and that it worked so wonderfully.
Yeah, and it is amazing, too, that unlike what came before, those movies haven't yet collapsed under their own weight, like a Spider-Man 3. Those
well, one thing that happened with those earlier films, they kind of thought the way to up the stakes in movie 2 and movie 3 or in movie 4 was bring in more bad guys, okay? Marvel seems to be the way to up the stakes is bring in more good guys.
Yeah, that's true. but you also think, and that again, I think what it points to, one of the reasons that it hasn't quite collapsed is because I think you're also now, you're getting just some of the best creators, actors, people involved in those movies. You know, the success, mm-hmm. They don't have to fight for their right to exist anymore.
Well, that's true.
You're getting creators who grew up with these characters. I don't think you get a Guardians of the Galaxy or an Ant-Man if
that's true, but
creators
I
had not seen those characters in their own childhood and said, but, I must tell
but we story. Are, I think we are saying that Marvel has been pretty relaxed or pretty welcoming to different creators playing in with their toys, but I will say that we are underselling how important it has been to have one creative vision behind the overarching idea, and have one voice that kind of says you can play, but these are the rules. And that sort of guiding principle has never, to my knowledge, been attempted at anything like the level it's being attempted now. However, that's worked out at Marvel, and that will be the real test for Marvel movies. Even more so than when they run out of story ideas is when they have to change people at the helm of that vision. Mm-hmm. How will that transition? When you have splintering groups, when you have people fighting for the movies, will suffer if you do, I think.
That's why I think probably the next big step is whatever happens, maybe again right around the same time, maybe what happens with DC's Justice League, what happens with Avengers Infinity War. And then also, I'd say, too, the other thing that is on the horizon now, probably the superhero movie I'm most excited about, is Wonder Woman. I don't know, again, that having a female lead will necessarily guarantee a change in the formula. But it does add a dimension we haven't seen anywhere close to enough.
Now, Marvel's doing the same thing with Captain Marvel.
With Captain Marvel and that. But I'm really excited about that. I think that could also be something new. Now, we don't have enough time to probably talk about, you know, superhero movies that don't have to do with Marvel and DC. But as a closing thought here, Brian, just maybe it would be good to say, how would you describe the genre as it was? And what would you say it is now? What is the overall big picture look at this genre?
Well, one, it was very small in scope. You know, the crimes they were solving were small time. Everything was really small. Self-contained and aimed very specifically at a very small demographic. And now it has grown to be much larger in scope, and aimed at as wide a demographic as possible, and is constantly trying to broaden its horizons. And so, you know, it's trying to get bigger and bigger. That's what I'd say the main thing now is how do you grow your parameters for what it can be?
Hey, man, nerds are taking over the world. So with that in mind, let's talk about some of the ways that has happened, probably through people just simply resonating with performances of different characters. So let's move into now the top five we have. Brian's top five superhero casting of different characters.
Best casting that didn't – I'm going to start by just one throwing out there. The casting that on paper should have been a home run, how it did not work, is really beyond me. But considering at the time he was cast, George Clooney should have been a perfect Batman.
True.
He really should have been.
True.
I mean, the guy had everything you would want from Bruce Wayne, and yet somehow they screwed that up so very badly he can never be in another superhero movie.
Pretty much.
But it should have been a home run though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I, you know, judging them on a scale, it's hard to say. But one that I think is underrated, and I'm going to put it in my top five, that I think is really underrated, is the work that Chris Evans has done as Captain America.
Nice. So number five, Chris Evans, Captain America.
He's been so good, but he's been sort of, he's been, even in his own movies, he hasn't really been the focal point of his own movies.
Right.
But he's been just as good as the headliners.
And you mentioned Avengers earlier. To me, he had to be perfect for that movie to work as well as it did, because you had to have someone who could command.
Robert
Downey Jr.
He's been beyond perfect.
Yeah.
Number four. I'm gonna go with Heath Ledger's Joker as just being this quintessential. Just that is. I grew up loving Nicholson's Joker, but I don't think it can light a candle to what Heath did.
All right. No argument there. What's number three?
Let's see. Number three, I'm going to go with, I'm going to go off kilter here a little bit, and I'm going to say Scarlett Johansson is Black Widow.
Oh, nice. Okay. Why her?
I just love what she brings to the role. I think she's been, you know, the scene in the Avengers where she's kind of showing up for the first time as a big character during the interrogation scene. And some of that was in the Iron Man 2 or Iron Man 3, which she's in it. Just, she's great as the role. I think she's perfect. Number two, let's see. Well, I'm going to go with the obvious one, which is Robert Downey as Iron Man, just because he has that kind of bravado and smirk and just – he's lovable, but he's also like it's a fine line because some of the stuff he says is really horrible. I mean, he's really an asshole in so many ways, but he manages to like walk that line where you love him. Before I mention my number one, I want to mention a couple of people that I really think are well cast, but one of them particularly that I think is just too early. Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool could be an all-time great, okay? But he's one film under his belt, one film of his own under his belt. Seems a little too soon to be saying it. I also want to mention, Patrick Stewart as Professor X is really, you know, that's a great cast. Didn't quite make the list, but going on with that, number one is from the same film series, and we've already mentioned it, and Hugh Jackman is Wolverine.
The story of that is so amazing.
I mean, he is Wolverine, right? When you close your eyes and you think Wolverine, you see Hugh Jackman, right?
He was the second choice.
Who was first?
Doug Ray Scott, who was in Mission Impossible 2, got hurt during filming Mission Impossible 2 and so could not be in X-Men. And so they turned to Hugh Jackman to fill the role.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just amazing. Yeah. I mean,
and the guy,
even in the crappy Wolverine movies, and let's be – I mean –
They're not good.
He is amazing.
You can go back and read Wolverine comic books from the 60s and 70s and be like, that's Hugh Jackman. It just is. And he's just so good. And I'm hoping that this is not his last hurrah, that he continues to pop up as some, you know, elderly version of the character. And I tell you, whoever follows him as Wolverine has some mighty big claws to fill.
There you go. Let us know what you think about the superhero genre, where it's been, where it could be going next, by dropping a line to us on Twitter at 10kmovies or visiting Brian's blog, 10kmovies.com. Until then, we hope your week is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline 11.